is a box, a musical box, wound up and ready to play. Can you guess what is in it today?
Thing that I saw as I lay there on the floor was Jesus Saves, painted by an atheist nutter, and a British Rail poster read, "Have an away day, a cheap holiday, do it today." I glanced back on my life and thought about my wife, because they took the keys and she'll think of it's me. I'm down in the tube station at midnight. The wine will be flat and the curry's gone cold. I'm down in the tube station at midnight. Don't want to go down in a tube station at midnight.
Mind the gap.
Hello and welcome. I'm Bill Lawrence, and this is Box 39, coming live from the London Underground Transit System, the Tube, a crossroads of history, culture, and innovation. The London Underground transcends the role of a transportation system. It is so much more. It's a living testament to London's journey through time. The rhythmic hum of trains, the vivid art adorning station walls, and the persistent reminder to mind the gap all converge to create an experience that extends beyond the mundane. It's a wonderful and very special institution. Hate it or love it, anyone who's ever been to London has undoubtedly used it at some point. So join me now, Bill Lawrence, as Box 39 journeys on the London Underground from its oldest to its most recent lines. And it's not just a history trip. This is an expedition, as so many of the best are, through personal reflection, collective experience, and great music, to find the very soul of London itself. Because this is the London Underground.
Liverpool Street. This is an All Stations Metropolitan Line train to Chesham. The next station is Moorgate.
I'm now on the very first line built on the London Underground in 1863, the Metropolitan Line. The magenta line on the map, 41 miles long, serving 34 stations. It starts in deepest Buckinghamshire, passes through leafy Hertfordshire, picks up in West London and finishes east in the city. From Amersham through Watford to Harrow, Wembley to Farringdon, Liverpool Street and finally Aldgate. It's over 160 years old. It's the great Uncle Bulgaria of the London Underground. The birth of the world's first underground railway marked a groundbreaking moment in urban transportation. Faced with the escalating chaos and congestion on its streets, the visionary concept of an underground railway emerged as a revolutionary solution for London. Departing from Paddington Station, the steam-powered inaugural journey to Farringdon marked not only a shift in how people move through the city, but also a paradigm change in urban planning. Victorian ingenuity materialised in the construction of this, the Metropolitan Railway, employing the innovative cut-and-cover method and adorning stations with ornate facades. This technological leap set the stage for an underground revolution, providing a swifter and more efficient alternative to the horse-drawn carriages above ground. The success of the initial line spurred expansion and further innovation. The early tube lines, originally owned by several private companies, were brought together under the Underground brand in the early 20th century and eventually merged along with the bus, tram and trolley bus services in 1933 to form London Transport. And the current operator is, of course, Transport for London. Today's massive multi-billion pound system all started with this little magenta Metropolitan line. I can smell its importance to London life. It's really quite humbling.
This is Box 39, and we are exploring the London Underground. It's known as the Tube to the millions who travel on it each day, though Queen Victoria called it the Devil's Sausage Hole. Noel Coward wrote his hit musical, Mind the Gap, based on his time as a driver on the Piccadilly line. And Shirley Bassey used to busk at Tottenham Court Road station to pay off her overdue library book fines. With Bill Lawrence.
Mind the Gap between the train and the platform.
This is a Hammersmith and City Line train to Hammersmith. The next station is Royal Oak.
This is the Hammersmith and City Line, the next underground line that was built in 1864. It's the pink one. Serves 29 stations over 15 miles. It's a very straightforward west to east line from Hammersmith out west to Barking in East London, skirting the City of London, the capital's financial heart, hence the line's name. I don't have much affection for this line, as with few stations to itself, it lacks a clear identity. Not much character, some would say, although it's 114 million passengers a year, well, they might say differently. It's another subsurface line, built by digging a long trench, laying the track and covering it over again. Originally, passengers were carried on gas-lit wooden carriages, hauled by steam locomotives, through Goldhawk Road and Latimer Park, Ladbroke Grove, and on to Aldgate East and Stepney Green. During the war, many tube stations were used as air raid shelters. They weren't always a guarantee of safety, of course. In 1941, during the Blitz, a bomb penetrated the booking hall of Bank Station, killing 111 people, many of whom were sleeping in passageways and on platforms. And in 1943, a test of the air raid warning sirens, together with the firing of a new type of anti-aircraft rocket, resulted in a crush of people attempting to take shelter in Bethnal Green Underground Station. 173 people, including 62 children, died. It was the worst civilian disaster in Britain during the Second World War, and the largest loss of life in a single incident on the London Underground network. My favourite Hammersmith and City station is Mile End, to the east of the city. Small and cosy, and sharing its platforms, of course, here allocated alongside the Central Line. And here is Pulp with their song from the film Trainspotting called Mile End.
We didn't have nowhere to live. We didn't have nowhere to go. Till someone said, I know this place I've been abroad. It was on the 15th floor. It had a board across the door. It took an hour to prise it off and get inside. It smelt as if someone had died. The living room was full of flies. The kitchen sink was blocked. The bathroom sink not there at all. Ooh, it's a mess, all right. Yes, it's my end. And now we're living in the sky. I never thought I'd live so high. Just like heaven, if it didn't look like hell. The lift is always full of piss. The fifth floor landing smells of fish. Not just on Friday, every single other day. Below the kids come out tonight. They kick a ball and have a fight. And maybe shoot somebody if they lose a boom. Ooh, it's a mess, alright. Yes, it's
the gap between the train and the platform.
This is Bromley by Bow. This is a District Line train to Richmond. The next station is Bow Road. Change for DLR from Bow Church.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform.
This is the District Line. That dark green line that meanders on what can seem a never-ending journey east to west from the countryside of southeast Essex all the way to the suburbs in West London, where it splits into a frond of separate lines like the cracks on a broken car windscreen. It's the only underground line to have traversed the Thames on a bridge, an exclusive and rather comforting thing. 60 stations over 44 miles, more stops than any other line. And built early, in 1868, and then electrified at the start of the 20th century as steam lines underground began to be seen as dirty by comparison to the new electric traction services. And today, it's a very busy line, following the Circle Line in the centre of London with trains every 2.5 minutes. Ravenscourt Park, Elm Park, and the perfect triplet of consecutive stops, Mile End, Bow Road, and then Bromley by Bow. The long-running BBC TV drama EastEnders has a fictional tube station, Walford East, which is located on the EastEnders version of the tube map in the position normally occupied by the real Bromley by Bow tube station. A rather useless piece of whimsy. But not everything connected to the London Underground has to be important or necessary. I think it's big enough for gratuitous irrelevance. the London Underground is most recognisable by its roundel. You know, that deep red circular disc with a navy blue horizontal line cutting across on a white background. And the same roundel shape is adopted and adapted by other transit systems in London. There's the turquoise for the Docklands Light Railway, and a brighter green for the London Tramlink system in South London, for example, and for just a few months more, a ginger orange for the London Overground services. The roundel became an integral part of station architecture in the 1930s. Venetian masts appeared outside stations, which acted like flagpoles to support the logo in three dimensions. Stained glass roundels were incorporated into windows above station entrances. The distinctive red, white and blue roundel is now a globally recognised logo, a cultural icon. It means your journey can begin. It means that you've found your way. It means safety, familiarity and security. It is the symbol of London itself.
The next station is Embankment. Change for the Bakerloo and Northern Lines and National Rail Services from Charing Cross.
Between Charing Cross and Temple stations on the District Railway occurred the worst disaster in London's underground history. The tragedy was caused when an Inner Circle train crashed into a District train which was stationary in the tunnel. Both were on the eastbound route. 6 people were killed, over 60 were injured. Both trains had been crowded with passengers, and injuries were caused by the telescoping of some of the coaches and by flying glass and splinters. At one time there was a fear of fire, but that horror was spared them. The cause of the disaster which has marred the fine record of the Underground has not yet been ascertained.
So we're now on the Circle Line, the bright and shiny yellow line. Temple, Mansion House, Barbican and Aldgate. Another one of the early cut and cover lines, first given life in 1871, and its tunnels are barely beneath the surface, even in the middle of London. It's more of a spiral shape than a circle. Quite short, only 17 miles, though with 36 stations, it connects most of London's main line termini. And almost all of these 36 stations are shared with 3 of the other old subsurface lines. There's the Inner Circle, which shares with the District Line, the Outer Circle, which shares with the Metropolitan, and the final spike, or arm, added in 2008, shares with the Hammersmith and City. Its name really does what it says on the tin. The Underground has long since been an architectural jewel in the crown of London. The early electric stations at the start of the 20th century had signature features: oxblood coloured tiles, moulded detailing, spacious arches and green-tiled, florally designed ticket halls. Then the line extensions into the countryside had cosy stations which blended in with the surrounding suburban idyll. In the late 1930s, the familiar, iconic modernist and Art Deco stations were emerging. But by the 1960s came a new design philosophy where the focus was on platform areas with grey tiling and brushed stainless steel detailing. And in the 1990s, the mood changed again as new stations revealed major architectural statements echoing the confidence of the 1930s with bold use of space and light and robust materials. Today, the Tube isn't merely a means to an end, it's an immersive experience, a subterranean art gallery that elevates the daily commute into a journey through aesthetic brilliance. The intertwining of art, architecture and engineering has transformed the Tube into a cultural phenomenon, a reflection of London's commitment to marrying functionality with flair.
This train is being held at a red signal and should be moving shortly.
Apologies, ladies and gentlemen, I'm standing held by a red signal, just waiting for the train ahead to clear the section. Because of signalling issues at Farringdon, quite a lot of trains that are reversing out of Edgware Road. So it probably might be a while before we move.
Great crowd. crowd of tourists and they're coming down the street. Please, there's punch with brand new Dr. Martens on their feet. Past those of leather jackets, old bric-a-brac, Indian sunglasses or a Chinese bubble hat. Tramps there in the window of a local butcher shop. Like a pack of wild dogs, they'd run off with the lot. In Primozilla, an angry man, his hair standing on end, shouts and rants in the ear of his imaginary friend in Camden Town. I'll meet you by the underground. In Camden Town, we walk there as the sun goes down. In Camden Town. In Camden Town, you can do anything you want to. A drunken busker hits the pavement, sending hot dogs in the air towards a broken down bus full of people going nowhere. String of Irish pubs far as you can see. Greek, Indian, Chinese, or would you like a cup of tea? The tapas, frankas, alcohol, tobaccas, bongs, bongo, bingo, Portuguese, maracas, says reggae in the jiggy, music everywhere. Every kind of song and dance, madness in the air. In Camden Town, I'll meet you by the underground. In Camden Town, we walk there as the sun goes down.
I love to polish my box, my special box, my box 39.
So we heard Suggs singing Camden Town, one of the busiest stations on this, the Northern Line.
This station is Camden Town, Bank Branch. Change here for southbound Northern Line service via Charing Cross and northbound service to Edgware from Platform 1.
The Black Line, the most travelled line, and first constructed in 1890. It's north to south, but it's not easy. Two different routes through central London, two southern branches and two northern branches. It was the first deep level tube line on the network, properly tunnelled. It rattles, it screeches, it rolls. It has 18 of the 31 stations built south of the Thames. It's a big beast, complicated, dominant, and at times it struggled. By the 1990s, it was known as the Misery Line, but in the last 30 years, it's seen a consistent programme of upgrades and improvements, becoming the third line after the Docklandsite Railway and the Jubilee Line to have automatic train operation, where the driver is present to mitigate any system failures or emergencies, rather than to operate the train. I love the Northern Line. I love its shapes. I love its inadequacies. Its complex central loop, where it's easy to catch the wrong train to the wrong north or south branch. Hampstead, Highgate, Mornington Crescent, Chalk Farm, Essex Road, and the two newest stations, Nine Elms and Battersea Power Station. Mosquitoes entered the London Underground during the Second World War. At the height of the London Blitz, 150,000 people were sheltering underground every night, all packed together. The smell was also highly unpleasant, except to mosquitoes, of course, who were drawn to this, as well as by the body warmth of the huddled masses. And these mosquitoes proliferated and actually evolved into a singular and unique underground species. But since COVID and the sudden and dramatic drop in passenger numbers, these mosquitoes seem to have almost disappeared. But there's still the rats, of course, usually seen down on the tracks. You're never far from a rat in the underground and in life.
Last train out. Usually a crowded one, carrying passengers who fraternize freely in an atmosphere of tobacco smoke and hops. But where their picture ends, another begins. The working day of a corps of women employed by the London Passenger Transport Board has started. They're the Mrs. Mops of the Underground. The women who dry clean the miles of tunnel in our vast subterranean railway system. In other words, Pathé cameraman Frank Basil is introducing you in this exclusive story to a section of women war workers known among themselves as Fluffies. They go down on all fours to sweep and scrape up tons of fluff and dust that we have left behind in our travels. It coats the insulators of the conductor rails, becomes impregnated with metal filings from brake blocks, and packs up in every corner and crevice. Charlie, walking along there, is the foreman. A sweet job for a fella who likes a little bit of fluff.
We're now on the shortest and smallest line on the London Underground, the Waterloo and City Line, turquoise on the map. Built in 1890, it runs deep under the Thames and has just two stops, just 1.5 miles long. A simple shuttle that takes the commuters from Surrey and the southwest who've arrived at Waterloo on National Rail Services to their work in London's financial district at Bank Station, which was originally called City Station, hence Waterloo and City. It's also known as the Drain. Is it because it frequently flooded, or because its walkway tunnels for commuters slope like a drain? I don't know. In fact, I prefer not to know. Mystery is such a great part of life, don't you think? As part of the privatisation of British Rail in 1994, the Waterloo and City Line was transferred to London Underground Limited for the sum of just £1. And the turquoise line colour was chosen by a lawyer working on the legal transfer of the line because it was her favourite colour.
This is Waterloo, where this train terminates. All change, please.
Escalators have been an invaluable part of London's infrastructure since 1911. The longest you'll find at Angel Station, where you travel up or down for 60 metres. The shortest, well, that's in Victoria Station. It's only got 6 visible steps at a time, and you can ride it from bottom to top in about 2 seconds. There are over 450 escalators on the London Underground network, but this number changes almost daily as breakdowns are common. After all, they're given a 40-year lifetime before replacement. And like knees, Austin Allegros, and post-war democracies, some escalators are just prone to breakdown. So here's one of the greatest pop songs ever written about the Waterloo and City Line, from the Kinks.
Shine so bright, but I don't need no friends. As long as I gaze on Waterloo sunset, I am in paradise. Every day I look at the world from my window. I am in paradise. Every day I look at the world from my window.
we're travelling on the big one, the Central Line, the Red Line that travels east-west for the longest distance of any line, a full 74 miles with 49 stations currently operating. The line was opened as the Central London Railway in 1900, crossing Central London along the central shopping street of Oxford Street to the financial centre of the City of London. No wonder it's called the Central Line. After the Second World War, the line was expanded, taking over steam-hauled outer suburban routes to the borders of London and beyond. It's a beast, and a very busy line, and often congested. It has the longest trains on the Underground, with 8 carriages. And it's familiar to North East Essex travellers. Rail replacement buses often use its suburb stops in East London and Essex. It has 2 stations that were built, but never opened, Denham and Harefield Road, both part of an aborted extension in Buckinghamshire. And it has several stations in rural Essex that closed in the 1990s. Ongar, Blake Hall and North Weald. A proposed new station at Harlow, connecting to the present terminus at Epping, is planned, yet presently is completely unfunded. The original railway stop at Stratford was for the Central Line, but now Stratford is the centre of many people's universe, a station that connects to a wide plethora of travel services as a major multi-level interchange. There's London Underground Central and Jubilee lines, there's the London Overground, the Docklands Light Railway, the Elizabeth Line, the West Anglia Main Line to Stansted, the Great Eastern Main Line to Norwich, and the C2C line connecting to Southend. It even has Stratford International, with connections to the Eurostar services that go all the way to Paris and Amsterdam. Stratford is enormous, complicated, vibrant, and on the doorsteps of the Olympic Park and the London Stadium, home of West Ham United. It's huge, it's breathtaking, it's confusing, yet it all makes central sense.
This is Stratford. Please mind the gap between the train and the platform. Change here for the Jubilee Line, the DLR, London Overground, TfL Rail and National Rail Services.
Latest addition to London's underground system is the Central Line extension from Liverpool Street to Stratford. The Minister of Transport, Mr. Alfred Barnes, opened the line by turning a golden key, which changed the signal lights and unveiled the new stretch of line, which cost over £3 million to complete. To round off the ceremony, the Minister, his wife and officials of London Transport were taken for a ride by the senior driver who once worked on the old Tuppenny Tube. Mr. Barnes enjoys a smoke on the way to Stratford and the end of the run.
This is the Bakerloo Line, the Brown Line. From 1906, it's run from suburban northwest London to the Elephant and Castle in south London via the West End. 25 stations, 15 of which are underground, over just 14 miles, partly on the surface and partly through deep-level tube tunnels. The line's name, of course, is a portmanteau of its original name, the Baker Street and Waterloo Railway. Its early 20th century stations brought elements of their design to a common standard. The stations below ground using Art Nouveau decorative tiling and the above ground stations built in red brick with stone detailing in an arts and crafts style. It's the line with style and personality. And trains built over 50 years ago, which because of funding are not due for replacement until the mid-2040s. It's like a curiously antiquated art teacher. Indeed, for the first 20 years of its existence, the Bakerloo line had the polarity of the conductor rails reversed. The outside rail was negative and the centre rail was positive, the very opposite to every other line on the underground. Why? Because it could. And its tunnels have a smaller diameter, meaning its trains are slightly smaller. It's got that central North London vibe. Regent's Park, Baker Street, Marylebone, Paddington, Edgware Road and Warwick Avenue, which has no surface station building and is recognisable from street level more by the plain utilitarian brick ventilation shaft built on the traffic island in the middle of the road. It has a nearby water bus service that runs from nearby Little Venice along the Regent's Canal, with boats departing hourly towards London Zoo and Camden Lock. It's a fabulous and all too rare example of integrated transit in London. Not quite on the Copenhagen level of integration, but it's a start.
Please stand clear of the doors. The next station is Warwick Avenue. Exit here for Little Venice.
And here's Duffy to tell you much more about Warwick Avenue.
When I get to Warwick Avenue, meet me by the entrance of the tube. We can talk things over a little time. Promise me you won't stay by the line. When I get to Warwick Avenue, please drop the past and be true. Don't think we're okay just because I'm here. You hurt me bad, but I won't shed a tear.
Nearness of lovers, tight on the tube, so close, the soft thrust of the train bitters my lip on the twill of his right shoulder. I smell the second waft of her breathed aroma, white with tended teeth, reserved for him. Received by this stranger, who suddenly loves before her bow can that wateriness in blue. As her still eyes unblock something of me through him, and I hear in thunder, wheels upon wheels, his small gasp to the rock of her carriage, words intended for one nuzzled other. Urgency spills as love does, as love does.
This is the Piccadilly line, the dark blue line on the map. It runs from the north to the west of London, with two branches and serving 53 stations. Arnos Grove, Caledonian Road, Hyde Park Corner, Sudbury Town, oh, and Sudbury Hill, and of course, Cockfosters. It was originally developed in 1906, and its stations in central London were rebuilt in the later 1930s to cater for a higher volume of passenger traffic and to prepare for the looming war, with some stations equipped with shelters and basic amenities such as bunk beds, toilets and first aid facilities. The disused Down Street station was converted to an underground bunker for the government use. Aldwych station was used as storage for British Museum exhibits. And as Heathrow has increased its terminals, so too has the Piccadilly line, extended to serve these, the latest addition being the link to Terminal 5 in 2008.
A light here for the Royal National Institute of the Blind. This is a Piccadilly line service to Heathrow Terminals 4 and 123.
On the 18th of November 1987, the large King's Cross fire broke out, the incident being near the Northern / Piccadilly line escalators, which killed 31 people. And as a result, wooden escalators were replaced on all underground stations. And on the 7th of July 2005, a Piccadilly line train was attacked by a suicide bomber as part of a coordinated wider attack on that day in London. The blast occurred in the morning rush hour while the train was between King's Cross, St Pancras and Russell Square. It was part of a coordinated Islamist terrorist attack on London's transport network and was synchronised with three other attacks, two on the Circle Line and one on a bus at Tavistock Square. The Piccadilly line bomb led to the largest number of fatalities, with 26 people reported killed.
This train is now ready to depart. Please stand clear of closing doors.
This is Box 39, with our special show, coming live from the London Underground. Featuring those rarely seen herds of royal antelopes that King Charles keeps at Green Park Station. And Ken Dodd Station, on the Northern Line, which can only be visited by passengers born in Liverpool. And Dagenham East Station, on the District Line, where all the station staff work entirely naked apart from a stout pair of socks, of course. With Bill Lawrence.
This is Tottenham Hale. This station has step-free access. This is a Victoria Line train to Brixton. National Rail services from Tottenham Hale are suspended. The next station is Seven Sisters. Doors will open on the right-hand side.
We're now travelling on my favourite line, the Victoria Line. The light blue line. It runs between Brixton in South London and Walthamstow Central in the northeast via the West End, and it's one of the only two lines on the network to run completely underground, the other being the Waterloo and City line, which we travelled on earlier. There's 16 stations, and all but Pimlico provide interchanges with other Transport for London or National Rail services. It's a short and handsome line. Black Horse Road, Tottenham Hale, Seven Sisters. Beautiful names for beautiful places. In the post-war era, the Underground underwent a transformative renaissance marked by ambitious expansion and innovative developments that reshaped the city's subterranean landscape. The introduction of the Victoria Line in the 1960s was a pinnacle of modern engineering, which whisked commuters through the city at unprecedented speeds, connecting key points with newfound efficiency. The line has humpback stations to allow trains to store gravitational potential energy as they slow down and release it when they leave a station, providing an energy saving of 5% and allowing trains to run 9% faster. Because it is entirely underground, the line was built with 50 tunnel ventilation shafts and several emergency escape shafts. With this line entirely underground, there is a short branch line in a tunnel to the north of Seven Sisters, which connects directly to the depot of rolling stock out near the marshes at Tottenham. Tottenham Hotspur Football Club have campaigned for a surface station adjacent to this depot to improve the stadium's transport links. But of course, no one seems to have the funding necessary for any of this. Other names for the line were considered before Victoria was chosen. There was the Walvik Line, which is Walthamstow to Victoria, the Viking Line, which is Victoria to King's Cross, the Mayfair Line and the West End Line, but Victoria was chosen. Further proof of the endemic monarchist traditions and obsessions that just can't be silenced.
This is a Victoria Line train to Brixton. The next station is Pimlico. Doors will open on the right-hand side.
The first of London Transport's automatically driven trains made its press debut. It's the type of rolling stock that will go into service on the new Victoria Line when it opens shortly. One man will be in charge of each train. Once the doors are closed and the start button pressed, the train takes over, receiving all its commands through the track. Faster, smoother, and more comfortable travel is promised for London's commuters on the new line. They're already used to standing, but it won't be quite so bumpy or for so long.
Lovely stations with such lovely names. Swiss Cottage, Canada Water, Neasden and Dollis Hill. And between Bond Street and St John's Wood is Baker Street, the inspiration for that Jerry Rafferty classic. These are all on our last line of travel, the Silver Grey Line, the Jubilee Line, the most recently built line on the London Underground, running from suburban northwest London to Stratford in East London via the Docklands, South Bank and the West End. Initially in 1979, it ran just to Charing Cross, then in 1999 there was an extension to Stratford. And following the extension to East London, serving areas once poorly connected to the Underground, the line has seen a huge growth in passenger numbers and is now the third busiest on the network. The new line was to have been called the Fleet Line, after the River Fleet, which is buried deep under London and used as a sewer since the mid-19th century. But some prominent Tories on the Greater London Council lobbied hard, and 2 years before it opened, the name was changed to the Jubilee Line to commemorate the Silver Jubilee of Queen Elizabeth II. Which goes to show it's not what you know, it's most definitely who you know when it comes to naming new lines for a modern mass transit system based in subterranean London.
The next station is Canary Wharf. Doors will open on the right-hand side. Change for the DLR.
This train terminates at Stratford.
It's a beautiful modern line. Some would say it's gorgeous. The newer stations are open and spacious with wide passageways, all glass and steel and chrome, with platform edge doors and 5G connectivity. The Jubilee Line not only expanded the reach of the Underground, but also symbolised a commitment to staying at the forefront of transportation innovation. London's ever-changing landscape found a mirror in its subterranean counterpart, illustrating the adaptability of the Underground to meet the evolving needs of a dynamic metropolis.
This train is ready to depart. Stand clear. Mind the doors. Mind the doors. Stand clear.
And so this is our journey's end. And we've barely scratched the surface of this beautiful, this awesome mass transit system here in London. You know, there's so much more. The buses, the coaches, the Docklands Light Railway, the trams, the river services, and the huge overground system with its 113 stations, and which reinvented itself at the start of the millennium and is about to reinvent itself again with its renaming into manageable sections at the end of 2024. And we haven't even mentioned all those abandoned stations. Or that map, the Tube map, the brainchild of Harry Beck, with its first schematic design in 1931, which defied the truth of geography to become one of Britain's top 10 design icons, sitting alongside Concorde, the Mini, the Spitfire, the London Taxi, the Red Telephone Box, the Red Pillar and Post Boxes, the World Wide Web, and the double-decker Routemaster bus. Well, all of those are for more Box 39s another time. As we hurtle through the 21st century, the Tube continues to reinvent itself for the modern age. The introduction of the Elizabeth Line, which is a separate entity from the London Underground, has succeeded in seamlessly connecting East and West London. The introduction of all-night Tube services has given the Underground a 24/7 life. And the advent of contactless payment and Wi-Fi connectivity within stations aligns the Tube with the digital age and ensures that even underground, Londoners remain plugged into the pulse of the city. I really believe that the future of the Underground is as dynamic as the city it serves, promising new chapters, innovations, and perhaps a few surprises lurking round the bend. The London Underground, 11 lines covering 250 miles, serving 272 stations and handling up to 5 million passenger journeys a day. Let's celebrate it. Let's applaud it. Let's honour it. This has been Box 39, and I'm Bill Lawrence, and I'm going underground. Be seeing you.
Is a Guppy production for Colne Radio and is committed to a varied, equitable and truly inclusive output that properly reflects the ethnic diversity of our community audience.